Здравствуйте, товарищ, and welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It is the Old Doors song of free speech, Old Doors song. Which song, how about Riders on the Storm? Why an Old Door? What does RBN have to do with an Old Doors song? Philbert, do you have any idea?
Well, Riders on the Storm. I know we just got a winter storm here. We just got some ice. I guess that really doesn't have anything to do with what you asked me. Sorry.
Well,
I don't know. Tell me, what does it have to do with it?
What RBN and Old Doors songs have in common is that they're both things that boomers listen to on the radio. How about that?
Okay. Well, you're correct.
Okay. And so to keep the Riders on the Storm riding, you want to go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send badly needed fundage. Now more than ever. Send rubles. Make sure you don't have to go through the SWIFT system, I guess. And then also download the CoSertified app from nationalbugle.com, not .org. .org is for losers, except for republicbroadcasting.org. That's totally for winners. And because you don't want to leave a kosher certified lifestyle, you want to be non-kosher certified. All right, so here's the thing. Philbert and I already recorded the show. And then this war broke out in Ukraine and kind of preempted the show. So this is a do-over, right?
Yep. Yes, sir, there's correct.
Okay. And so once again, we're recording this. We're still, you know, we could wind up getting news cuffed again, as the expression goes, but it's about like 15 hours or 16 hours before showtime, or maybe 18 hours. I don't know what it is. And about 15 hours before show, 16, something like that.
Yeah,
so
a
lot happened
right
between now and then. And this is not really a news show so much as an analysis show. So if you want the latest news, you're going to have to find it somewhere else. But here's the analysis. I want to set the stage a little bit. And so granted, by the time you listen to this, things might have changed a bit, events on the ground. But about 24 hours ago or so, the Russian military, they took out the Ukrainian Air Force with missiles, whatever, and the Ukrainian Navy. They bombed out a lot of the airfields. They, for a while, it seemed that they had taken control of an airport near Kiev, and it looked like they were going to be landing large numbers of troops directly into the heart of Ukraine rather than having them rumble across the landscape in tanks. Now, that may have changed. That may have already changed. So I'm not exactly sure of all the events on the ground. You've got Chernobyl. The Chernobyl nuclear reactor apparently is now in the hands of Russian and or Belarusian troops. Chernobyl is like very close to the Belarusian border. So you've got this. It's the military actions are not being limited to those two breakaway. So you've got, you know, the Ukrainian Navy had, they have a base at Odessa, and that's been neutralized. So that's kind of the scene as we talk. And now we've got to figure out what to make of it. But, I mean, before we jump into all of that, is there anything that I'm leaving out? Have you heard anything? Well, first, have you heard anything that I'm leaving out?
No, I haven't. I'm I know you know a lot more about these geopolitical events than me, so I'm happy just to listen in and get your take on everything, because it's pretty hard to read between the lines of the MSM now, so mainstream media. So go ahead, continue. I'm listening.
Okay, and where did you hear about it? Did you hear about it through the mainstream media or elsewhere?
So I've been to be honest, I follow Ramsey Paul a lot, and he did a stream, and it's not like I go to him for my news. It's not what I'm saying. I noticed he did like a 2.5 hour stream on it and his take on it. And really that's the only thing I've watched is just his opinion on it. And you know, he's a fairly smart guy, Ramsey Paul on, YouTube. He still has a YouTube channel, believe it or not. But anyway, other than that, no, I haven't watched any of the mainstream TV, or anything. So,
And by the way, Ramsey Paul, he's done an advertisement for Co-Certified. So I used to have a link to
it. He's a very good guy. I've met him. I've personally met him, had lunch with him one day, and he's a fellow nationalist from the Ozarks. And,
excellent.
You know, it's a beautiful place down here. So, yeah.
Well, that's excellent.
So anywho, okay. on with what you were speaking about.
All right. Well, and then one last question. Out there in normie world, over the past 24 hours, have you overheard or been party to any discussions on this? What are the normies saying?
Yeah, somebody at my work asked me if Russia was going to go to war with Ukraine, and I just straight up said no, it's all Jewish fear porn. And, well, I guess I was wrong. I don't get tangled up in the weeds in these geopolitical events so much. I'm, like I said before, blue collar working goy, and I pay attention to a lot of the local stuff. And it's kind of hard for me to predict these geopolitical events and stuff. So I try to stay out of it. I mean, or listen to somebody maybe like yourself that obviously has much more valid credentials to be analyzing something like this.
Well, anyway, I ask because what normies think matters a lot, actually. If it didn't matter, you wouldn't have advertising industries and propaganda news industries and all of that.
So frankly, I guess you could consider on this topic, on the Russia topic, I mean, you could consider me a normie because I really don't know a whole lot. I mean, I know a little bit of the history of Russia, you know, other than a normie may not, you know, understand World War II, you know, in a sense. And I'm not.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the definition of a normie, is not understanding the most important things.
Well, then I'm not a normie then.
You're not a normie.
I was wrong that I thought that it was basically the media just hyping everybody up. So I just tended to not believe it. So that's why that's how I came up with my opinion. And I was obviously mistaken.
Well, no, I mean, here's the thing. It didn't have to happen. This is not something that I think it's clearly not something that like Vladimir Putin had planned, and then carried out. I think it's very clear that Vladimir Putin is responding to, events as they unfold. That this is not part of some grand master plan. And so I'll tell you why. It's because there was the coup d'etat in February of 2014, orchestrated by Victoria Nuland in particular. I'm sure the CIA was involved and others in the State Department were involved. And as a result of that, the elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, he wound up fleeing the country. He's actually in Russia. And you had a puppet government installed. Why is it a puppet government? Well, because we have the tapes of Victoria Nuland having a cell phone conversation with Gregory Piat, who Victoria Nuland was the Undersecretary of State for, or I guess Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs, which made her, you know, the spot person for Ukraine. And Gregory Piatt was the ambassador to Ukraine. And in this intercepted conversation, which has never been denied, and in fact, it really has been confirmed, you can hear Victoria Nuland and Gregory Piatt discussing who is going to be in charge of the new government. And Victoria Nuland's very clearly saying, we want Yatsenyuk. We want Yats. She called him Yats because he's a mensch. He's a Jew. We want Yats, and we don't want, Klitschko, the boxer. We don't want him in the government. We want this person, not that person. And at one point, Gregory Piatt says, well, what if the EU thinks such and such? And she says, famously, F the EU. And, you know, this got leaked. And she actually, she made up, or she ordered I Heart the EU buttons to hand out to her staff as a joke, right? So, I mean, the whole thing is clear. It was her. There's no doubt that it was her. And she was also out there on the streets handing out supposedly sandwiches. I still think they were bagels, but she was handing them out to the crowd. Which it's like, that's just symbolic, but still, the phone call is a lot more meaningful. So there was an overthrow of the government 8 years ago. As a result, three provinces declared independence, one of which, Crimea, was annexed, but the other two, Donetsk and Lugansk, even though they declared independence and wanted to be annexed by Russia, Vladimir Putin for 8 years refused. And I know everybody's heard me say this, but he refused to recognize their independence for 8 years. He still hasn't annexed them. And for 8 years, he was trying to get them reincorporated back into Ukraine on the condition that the Ukrainians stopped being mean to Russians, ethnic Russians, because ethnic Russians were, they were facing all sorts of oppression, not allowed to speak their own language in their own schools and whatnot. And I think, you know, the real motivation that Putin had for wanting them incorporated back into Ukraine rather than these are Russian speakers, these are ethnic Russian speakers, you'd say, well, why didn't he annex them?
Right. Well, it was a political referendum, wasn't it? I mean, whenever Crimea voted to join Russia, right? I mean, that's pretty much a political referendum. Is there a difference between a political referendum and annexation? Are those the same thing?
So Crimea, they voted to reinstate their declaration of independence because they had originally declared independence in 1992, immediately following the breakup of the Soviet Union, because it's inhabited by Russians. They did not want to be part of Ukraine, an independent Ukraine. But that declaration of independence was frozen, but it was unfrozen in 2014. And then they requested to be annexed by Russia, and Russia annexed them. You know, annexation doesn't mean tanks rolling in conquest. It simply means you say this land is now part of our country. So Texas was annexed to the United States. Hawaii was annexed to the United States. Land gets the Louisiana Purchase was annexed to the United States. So that's all it means. But the Donetsk and Lugansk weren't, and I think it's clear that Vladimir Putin's first choice was to have a significant number of ethnic Russians remain in Ukraine in order to balance. To maintain a kind of balance of power within the Ukraine so that it would not become like an anti-Russian state that would be incorporated into NATO and the EU, right? NATO in particular. That I think that was always his objective. But over the past year, it's become clear that, well, that wasn't going to happen. That it had been 8 years. And Ukraine had never, not only did they not remove those anti-ethnic Russian laws, but they doubled down on them. And not only did they refrain from joining NATO, but they, you know, they were openly trying to join NATO, and NATO was saying to Russia, hey, you can't tell us who and who can't join, who can and who can't join our alliance. And it's, and then the, I think the last straw was probably last week when Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that Ukraine would acquire nuclear weapons, because of course they have a nuclear power industry. Chernobyl's there; they have nuclear power plants there, and they used to have nuclear weapons as part of the Soviet Union. So it would have been something easy enough for them to do. So I think. So it wasn't that there was a long-term plan. The long-term project that for 8 years Putin was working on was trying to reincorporate them into Ukraine with protections and autonomy, and hopefully that would that in itself, having a large number of ethnic Russians and pro-Russian people, would prevent Ukraine from joining NATO. But once it became clear that wasn't going to happen, then all the calculus changes. That's the way I look at it, and I think that's correct. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, yeah, now I've said that a few times. So now what? Now what? So you did want, and so the thing is, you know, like I've been saying all along that I didn't really think either side wanted war. And of course, we talk about war. Like right now, we've to the extent there's been war, it's been for 24 hours, and you're not having reports of civilian casualties. I think there's reports of 150 or so Ukrainian military that have been killed, which. Not a surprise if you're, you know, bombing naval bases and air bases, and it's all regrettable. But we have to keep everything in perspective. And had Ukraine been absorbed into NATO, and then NATO put offensive weapons and nuclear weapons into Ukraine. And the war that would come later, I mean, the war that comes now, it could become World War III. It could be nuclear war. It might be that nobody's going to listen to this Riders on the Storm because we're all going to die in the next 16 hours. But
yeah, that's the really scary part of it, to be honest.
Yeah. But honestly, and you know, this is one of the things I was saying, that you could always have miscalculation. And actually, I think this is probably a miscalculation on the part of Victoria Nuland, who's back in the saddle, and the fake Brandon R. Trojan administration. I think it is a miscalculation. I think these people, and I know I've said this stuff before, but they, people like Victoria Nuland and Anthony Blinken, they're about 60 years old, and they've spent their entire careers in or around the State Department, in a time when America could just push everybody around and get its way. And they just got used to that. Yep. And it's not that way anymore. So I think that's a miscalculation. Now, the question is, do they continue to miscalculate and we wind up with a thermonuclear war? Or do we wind up with a humiliation, just like the Afghan withdrawal was a humiliation, and a glorious one at that, one I completely welcome. Is it going to be a complete humiliation for the West, or is it going to be something else? Is it going to be a protracted, like, war, guerrilla war, ground war that's going to go on for months?
I think we're going to kind of stay out of it, really. I think that's what will probably happen. But I don't know. So here's a question, and this is an honest question. I don't know the answer. How does this affect Israel, or how do you think this affects Israel? How do they view it?
ground war that's going to go on for months.
I think we're going to kind of stay out of it, really. I think that's what will probably happen. But I don't know. So here's a question, and this is an honest question. I don't know the answer. How does this affect Israel? Or how do you think this affects Israel? How do they view it?
Okay, so there's a few ways it affects Israel. One way is it's a distraction. So everybody's looking one way. And when everybody's looking one way, it provides an opportunity for Israel to strike at Syria, which they're doing. So they've been bombing Syria and nobody notices because everybody's distracted this way. And by the way, and I wish I could remember which was the distraction and which happened first, but the Soviet invasion of Hungary in 1956 to put down the rebellion against the Jewish Communist Party leaders in 1956 in Hungary, that took place at the same time as the Israelis, French, and British seized the Suez Canal. And I don't remember which one came first. One of them came first, and then while everybody was looking at this one crisis, then the other crisis happened. So there's that. But, you know, another thing is, Iran has said that they are, they support the Russian action. And so it impacts Israel in that, especially if things go well militarily for Russia, then, and it shows that the United States is a paper tiger, that the United States with all this tough talk about protecting Ukraine and, it's being in America's national security interest. If America does nothing, then what? People talk about China invading Taiwan, which I don't think would happen, but it could under certain circumstances. And, it's certainly going to impact the renewed Iran nuclear deal talks, which Israel's trying to get into. So it impacts them in these ways. And the thing is, if Russia comes out on top in this, it gives them a stronger hand everywhere. And Russia is, the Russian military, they're still in Syria. There's like still an air base there. And so to the extent Russia comes out in a stronger position, it's bad for Israel. Does that make any sense?
Okay. No, yeah, that's an interesting take. So, yeah, I was watching the ruble today. I've been kicking around the idea of trading some currencies again on the side a little bit. And, boy, the market, I noticed it was closed. It was usually open. And, I mean, that's not surprising, due to everything that happened earlier today.
So is that the ruble market that was closed specifically?
Yes, the central bank, the Russian central bank took action. Mm-hmm. They shut down the market.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And I think that the Russian stock market's down a whole lot. I think maybe 30 or 40% or something, which depending on how things go, if this winds up being a swift victory for Russia, then the Russian stock market's going to recover. The economic sanctions are not likely to be a big deal for Russia. Russia's been subjected to sanctions in particular for 8 years, but there are some that went into effect even earlier. And the Russian economy is just adjusting, and they're a lot less vulnerable to sanctions than they were before. So I don't think that's even a factor. But so, going forward, there are some questions. So, like I say, I think that this was not part of Russia's grand plan. It may have been a contingency plan. And as far as a contingency plan, I'm sure, because they're very serious people, I'm sure that, like, the actual you know, military plans were drawn up a long time ago, and have probably been subject to continuous review. But the decision to actually implement them, to go forward, was one that I'm sure was only taken a few days ago, and was a result of the attitudes of the Western side, the so-called Western side, the Jewish side. And so, you know, what happens moving forward depends on two things. One is the actual military, events on the ground, but also it is the actions of the, you know, Zionist dominated Western governments. So it's, you know, so it's hard to predict, but, you know, here's a question. And, you know, what would Russia's, or Putin's objectives be? And, you know, your guess is as good as mine, so we'll start with your guess.
I don't know everything about the history of Russia, and I haven't watched that long speech of his, but from what I understand, he talked about the history quite a bit. So I imagine his aims are to reunify the Russian ethnic Russians with their people, kind of similar to what Hitler was trying to do in World War II with the Danzig Strip. So that's my take. I mean, maybe that's too simplistic, or maybe it's not.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
And I haven't watched that long speech of his, but from what I understand, he talked about the history quite a bit. So I imagine his aims are to reunify the Russian ethnic Russians with their people, kind of similar to what Hitler was trying to do in World War II with the Danzig Strip. So that's my take. I mean, that maybe that's too simplistic, or maybe it's not. I don't know.
No, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that was not his position for these past 22 years. His position was that Russia, and I think it's written into the Russian Constitution before Putin became president, that Russia will guarantee the security of ethnic Russians outside of its borders. Because when the Soviet Union broke up, you had huge numbers of ethnic Russians who were in these other republics. Kazakhstan was almost half Russian at the time it broke up. A lot of those ethnic Russians left, but there's still millions. Ukraine was probably like a third ethnic Russian. Latvia, I think, was about 45% ethnic Russian. So you had like ethnic Russians all over the place who were kind of orphaned. And so that was part of, I believe part of the Russian Constitution. But in order to try to do like Hitler, I mean, Hitler, he annexed the Sudetenland, which was ethnic German, and had the Treaty of Versailles after World War One. If it had been implemented fairly, as in particular the principle of self-determination, the Sudetenland would have been part of Germany. And Austria would have been allowed to become part of Germany, and Danzig would have been part of Germany had that principle of self-determination been applied. Now, the thing with Russia, you know, Putin, the two presidents you've had of post-Soviet Russia, Yeltsin and Putin, and I'm not even counting Dmitry Medvedev, because Putin just kind of stepped aside and he was prime minister and he was really the power. But neither of the presidents really wanted to go to the extent of adjusting borders, right? So Hitler, he wanted to adjust borders and get the ethnic Germans into the German state. And Russian leaders, Putin in particular, that's something they would like to do, but it was never really an objective. They tried to guarantee, Putin has tried to guarantee the rights and security of Russians outside Russia. But, you know, but to start redrawing boundaries, well, A, where does it stop? And then B, it's a double-edged sword, because within the Russian Federation, there are non-Russian regions, including Chechnya, which fought a civil war or fought a war of independence, which it ultimately lost. They have a high degree of autonomy, but they're within the Russian Republic. And there's other areas like that. So it's a double-edged sword. And there was never really any appetite in the Russian leadership for redrawing borders, because where is it going to stop? But it was something that was basically imposed on Russia. And, you know, the first post-Cold War redrawing of borders of those Republican, of the inherited borders, the internal borders that were inherited from either the Soviet Union, Czechoslovakia, or Yugoslavia. The first Republican borders that were redrawn was when Kosovo was recognized as independent from Serbia by the West, which was a precedent that Vladimir Putin, he criticized that because he said, we have, so far we've respected these internal borders. We've respected them. And then the second precedent was Crimea. And again, that was something that was forced by the West with that coup d'etat. And with that coup d'etat of, not just pro-Western, but anti-Russian, anti-ethnic Russian leadership, with that coup d'etat,
And also the prospect of the Russian naval base at Sevastopol, which even when Crimea was part of Ukraine, the naval base remained in Russian hands. It was just too much. And so Russia annexed Crimea at that point. So you already had those two examples. With this, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen with borders? And, you know, there are, besides these three provinces of Crimea, Donetsk and Luhansk, there are like three or four other provinces that are about half Russian, half Ukrainian, including Odessa. And so what's going to happen? What are they going to do? So here's the thing. Is this simply going to be resolved by having Luhansk and Donetsk annexed into Russia? Is Vladimir Putin and Russia going to try to annex those other provinces, or at least parts of those other provinces, which are about half Russian ethnically? Another question is, will he simply accept a surrender from Zelensky? Or is Zelensky going to have to resign? Is this going to be regime change? You know, so these are questions. And so, I mean, Vladimir Putin has said that he's open to negotiations. But what kind of negotiations? He said negotiations on surrender terms. And, you know, you can surrender. Saddam Hussein surrendered without leaving office. So, you know, there are things like that. If Russia was to insist that the current government of Ukraine resign, which maybe that would be a very good idea. Well, I don't know. This is just pure speculation on my part. But the president who was deposed in 2014, Viktor Yanukovych, he's in exile in Russia. Now, as president, he wasn't particularly pro-Russian. He was kind of trying to play off Russia against the EU and get the best deal. Although he was, you know, when his support did come from the ethnic Russian community in particular. But they could very easily just bring back Viktor Yanukovych and say he was unconstitutionally overthrown and he's going to be the interim president, and then, you know, we'll take it from there. There's a lot of things that could happen. I mean, World War III could happen, but there's a lot of things that could happen. You could have a carving up of Ukraine in such a way that most of the ethnic Russians are annexed to Russia, and the rump Ukraine. I think if that happened, the thing is that if they do something like that, the Ukrainians in what's left of Ukraine are going to be very angry, and they're going to be very hostile, and Russia would insist on a demilitarized, neutral Ukraine. There would probably be like treaties or something that would insist that Ukraine not have any foreign military cooperation on its soil, you know, no foreign military bases, no foreign military alliances. You know, very strict limits on its weaponry. So that type of thing. That at this point, that's actually probably the most likely scenario, but there's a whole bunch of other things. Now, you said you've listened to some mainstream media, so you've probably heard talking heads. And I think, you know, I think there's a lot of delusion out there. I think a lot of, like, I listened to some Deutsche Welle and France 24, some European outlets. And I think there's, you know, I heard some discussion on Deutsche Welle, and I think a lot of it's kind of delusional. You know, and I heard, I guess, a retired American general. And, you know, one thing you hear is they'll have this whole laundry list of complaints about Vladimir Putin, that he, you know, he poisoned this journalist or whatever. And, you know, whether you believe that or not, when you look at that laundry list, it certainly pales in comparison to everything that the United States was doing during those, that same period that Vladimir Putin was in charge of Russia, including invading Afghanistan, invading Iraq, toppling Muammar Gaddafi and assassinating him, and trying to do the same to Syrian government. So there's all that. But to the extent you're seeing things on mainstream media, what are these people saying?
Just how evil of a dictator, and a brutal dictator at that. Lots of mean adjectives against Vladimir. And I mean, to be honest, I could take it or leave it. You know, I mean, this beef is between them. And it's sad to see two fellow Slavic people, you know, fighting each other. I mean, I guess in large part, they're not fighting each other. It's not a hot war, but, you know, people are dying. And, you know, you hate to see that, especially since they're white. It's unfortunate, to say the least. But as far as what the talking heads are saying that I'm seeing, it's just mainly how evil Putin is. And whatever, he grew up with rabbis, and, you know, he's talked about his multiculturalism, and they're bringing in multiculturalism slowly to Russia. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they can do that, whatever. I want to pay attention to America, you know, so I wish the media and, you know, would, I mean, it's a long pipe dream, but, you know, the media should, if they were to do their jobs, they would be talking about our issues that are affecting us.
So one thing is, when you hear Putin talk about multi-ethnic Russia, it's very different from, you know, the United States, Canada, Australia, Europe, because it's not due to immigration into Russia. It's due to the historical fact that the Russian Empire conquered a lot of territory inhabited by non-Russians. And so they conquered the Caucasus Mountains, and the Caucasus Mountains are full of, you know, Muslims, or, you know, Armenians, or just a bunch of non-Russians. They conquered Siberia. And, you know, Siberia is a home of lots of Mongols and other non-Russians. And so the population of Russia is only about 75% Russian. And that's not because of immigration. That's because so many non-Russians had been conquered during the Tsarist years. And it's just a legacy. So there's that. But, you know, in the time we have left, one other way I want to put this in perspective is that if you look at what's been going on in the United States, whether we're talking about, like, say, the Black Lives Matter and, you know, the overall racial attack on whites, whether you're talking about the massive immigration, whether you're talking about the faked election, or, you know, the what I call the coup d'etat against Donald Trump with the impeachments and the fake election, whether you're talking about the corona apocalypse, all this corona tyranny, these are all Jewish agendas. And also this hostility towards Russia is a Jewish agenda. And so, you know, on the one hand, we shouldn't be so wrapped up in what goes on in other parts of the world that we get ourselves involved. Right. On the other hand, and I'm not talking about we or anybody listening to this or any American state institution getting involved. But I think what we have to understand is that both the Russians under Vladimir Putin and ourselves, we're struggling against the same Jewish power. And to the extent that Vladimir Putin has a success and humiliates the NATO, which is an agent of NATO is an agent of America, and America is dominated by Jewish power. To the extent that Vladimir Putin humiliates his current opponents, that can only be good for us, because these are the same people that are dominating us through country. And we need to have these people humiliated. The danger is that, okay, here's, before the show ends, you know, last thing I want to get to is like Trump. And have you heard anything? Like, Trump's been making statements over the past few days. Have you heard any of them?
No. I quit listening to him. And it was largely due to a vaccine, his take on the warp speed.
Yeah. And that's perfectly reasonable. Trump has made some pronouncements. He was on the Buck Sexton show a few nights ago. It was the day after the Vladimir Putin recognized the independence of these two countries, but it was before the military action. And he was saying this is he's a genius, it's a brilliant move. But you know, when you hear him talk, especially if you're hearing it secondhand, really, what was the context of that? Was he saying it was like a kind of evil genius? But then like a couple nights later, and again, I think it was before the, it had to have been before the actual military operation started. He was making, I heard him, at least excerpts of him, not just, quotes, but him actually speaking. And, you know, it's possible that his attitude is like, oh, if I had been president, I would have put Vladimir. It's possible, but honestly, it really sounds like that's what he's saying. It sounds like he at least has a certain amount of recognition that Putin's position has some justification. Now, I think the big danger is the Republican establishment, and I think the knee-jerk reflex of typical MAGA people is to say, look what Putin did. Look what Biden did. Biden was he's so weak, and he's just letting Russia do everything, and next thing you know, Russia's going to be rolling tanks into Belgium. I think that's the natural knee-jerk response of these people. But so far, it doesn't seem like Trump's doing that. But he's kind of a wild card here, because if he comes out like that, which is possible, because while he was president, even though he ran for president on a platform of making friends with Russia, because of the whole Russia hoax. If he comes out like that, which is possible because while he was president, even though he ran for president on a platform of making friends with Russia, because of the whole Russia hoax, as president, he just applied more and more sanctions. And he was always outfoxed. He was always cornered and channeled into a policy of hostility towards Russia in order to prove that he wasn't a Putin puppet. And, you know, he was played. I don't know if he's learned anything, because he doesn't seem to have learned anything about the vaccines, as you point out. So he's kind of a wild card. And as of the time of this recording, it's too early to say whether he's going to play a constructive role in this or not. But it's a wild card. And so that's something for us to look out for. But we're coming up towards the end of the show. Do you have any final thoughts?
No, not really. We should play one of our songs. Or one of my songs.
We will play one of our songs. We will do that. And,
Speaking of the vaccine, we should introduce our classic hit.
Well, let's do that. Without further ado, I'll be back again next week with more exciting episodes of National Bugle Radio, and I won't get no vaccination. All right, Philbert,
okay,
thanks
I appreciate it. I gotta go.
Sorry to keep you so long, but thanks.
It's all right. I'll see you later. Bye.
Bye-bye. No.
vaccination. No vaccination.